You are listening to the Remotepreneurs Podcast. Here, you'll learn how to adapt to a new future of doing business remotely by listening to interviews with the new breed of entrepreneurs called Remotepreneurs. Now, welcome your host, a remotepreneur that came from the factories to building multiple location independent incomes all remotely, Philip Ville Stankowski.
Hello, remotepreneurs. This is Philip Ville. I'm calling from Macedonia. I'm still under lockdown. I think in a few weeks we are going to open up and the borders are going to open up. This COVID-19, probably you know by now, that changed my plans. I should go to Sri Lanka now. I should be in Bali and maybe in a few months in Barcelona, but I guess I'm sticking in Macedonia maybe for 3-4 months. We'll see how it goes. Anyway, on this episode, we do have an interesting guest that currently he's in Japan. He's from Australia, but in the past 6+ years, he's a digital nomad that managed to build few successful companies. One of them, it's a 7-figure agency. Now he's building a big SaaS, a really interesting texting and messaging platform that I think, as things are going, it's going to replace email marketing. So that's definitely something that you should consider. And in today's topic, we would like to discuss how to actually stair-step from one business to another, how to actually start one business, build it, then pivot to something else, then pivot to something else and build it while you're actually remote with remote team, because that's the future. So on the other line, we have Jesse. He's currently in Australia. He has a really nice office back then with a really nice studio with Mike, and looking forward to pick his brain around how to pivot from one thing to another. So Jesse, thank you for being part of the podcast.
Yeah, thanks, Matt, for having me on. And yeah, I'm still in Japan. I managed to stay in Japan throughout all of COVID. I think you said it was back in Oz. So managed to stay here, thank God. And yeah, it's been nice.
Yeah, so how did the COVID-19 lockdown there work? Just off the topic.
I mean, Japan's kind of good because things like mask wearing and general like personal responsibility is really high in Japan. And so everyone's quite respectful, like all the trams and public transport, everyone's wearing their mask. There's not really any, you know, you're not seeing the issues that you're seeing in other countries where there's defiance and people not wanting to follow the law or the regulation. Generally, the minute that all the prefectures got announced to go into lockdown, everyone was like, all right, we're just going to stay inside. And then, you know, all the restaurants shut down and they were pretty good at converting to like the temporary new way of working. So all the main restaurants, especially the fancy ones, started serving, you know, bentos and takeouts all around. So, you know, instead of going to a nice restaurant, what we'd do is we'd go out on a Saturday and go to 3 or 4 places and grab their little bento box, whether that's like a nice Wagyu sandwich, or that's, I don't know, lots of nice nibblies and stuff, and then take that home. So Japan's done a good job. I think the country's a little bit let down, the Olympics being shut off. So that's looks like that's not going to happen. But other than that, it's been a good country to go into lockdown. And just before I came here, I was in Taiwan. I think they're another country that did like a brilliant job at just locking everything down. And now things are almost back to normal, which is good.
Yeah, good. I guess we can get the example from there. But that country has like really, really good discipline. When I think about Japan and maybe Germany, it's like, oh, discipline. That's the one word that comes to my mind, to be honest. Maybe Japan, even perfection.
Yeah, it's a complex country with a lot of really complex dynamics that like, I've lived here for a year now. I met a nice girl, moved here, and I'm still learning a lot of the nuances. It's a complex country, and like out of all the countries that I've been to, Japan is like a hard mode nation. It's very hard to stay here. The visa requirements are ridiculous, but it's rewarding. If you can stay here, then it feels like you've got a reward. It's not like Thailand where you can get like the Thai elite visa and just stay there as long as you want. Here, it's very much a hard mode country to live in.
So you need to go through a really, I don't know, weird filter to actually stay there. So I guess the country is safe and all works like a charm.
All of it's safe. Yeah, all of it's safe. It's just they're not really, you know, for me as a nomad, there's no visa that matches me. So like right now I'm under 30, so I'm on the working holiday visa. So that as an Australian gives me 18 months. After that, I don't know what I'm going to do. I really like my girlfriend. I want to stay, but I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I don't a work visa. I don't mix and like, I don't match. A normal visa, I don't match. And so really the only one that I match is a spousal visa. And I'm not really sure if I want to get married yet. So yeah, it's a tricky thing. The nomad friends that I have met, a lot of them have set up a business here. But unlike setting up a business in Estonia, like, yeah, it's like, I wouldn't want to set up a business in Japan. So like, I don't know. It's hard. The routes aren't necessarily clear. And so me and my girlfriend are currently trying to work that out a little bit. Yeah, it's a funny nation. It's a hard nation to stay in.
Well, if you like traveling, and I hope that things are starting to get normal, maybe you can take her with you and, you know, just travel somewhere else. Come to Macedonia. Yeah. You're not that disciplined like Japan.
Well, the whole team's in Macedonia, so I need to come over like soon, right? I mean, I haven't seen the team for a pretty long time, so yeah.
Yeah, you should. Okay, so just curious, let's go quickly through your background, like how you initially started with a digital nomad, what happened before that, and why you make the decision to do that?
Yeah, sure. So where's a good place to start? So like, I'm gonna get pretty early. So when I was a kid, growing up, my old man ran a software business, and all throughout growing up, I kind of watched him build it. It was a point of sale system in Australia, so the turnstile machines and stuff. He ended up growing a pretty sizable business there, and ever since I was young, I always respected that. And for me, I always had it in my mind that I wanted to have my own business, but for him, I saw like building a software business was hard and difficult. And so I didn't want to build a software business. I actually wanted to go in the fitness industry, you know, polarized difference. And so I started working in gyms, initially as a personal trainer. And then, after a year, I ended up getting a job in a supplement store. And whilst in that store, you know, I worked and I did a couple of bodybuilding competitions, during that time. But whilst I was doing that, I built an e-commerce store for that company. They had a very terrible like press the shop site that would always break. And so I kind of took it upon myself, you know, so many hours in the store doing nothing. I was like, I've got to fill the time with something. And so I built a Magento site for them. And then the site started to do some revenue. Like it you know, went from a sale a week to a few sales a day and then a few more sales a day. And the boss ended up flying down and going, hey, do you want to move to Canberra, which is where the head office was, and you can work with us. You can work with, you know, the boss. And I was like, oh, this seems exciting. And so I packed up my stuff in Sydney, moved down to Canberra. And for the period of about three or four years, I worked with those guys. And the company kind of boomed. We ended up running the largest supplement store in Australia. We ranked number one for terms like supplements, Optimum Nutrition, protein powder, creatine. It was a ridiculous time. And I also learned how to basically scale an e-commerce company through vertically integrating. So we ended up having two distribution companies. We started our own brand. So I got to learn manufacturing. And all this, I was basically working directly with the boss. And so built up a good skill set around e-commerce and kind of running a company. And in all honesty, he gave me way more responsibility than anyone should give an 18, 19, 20 year old kid. I was like running sales meetings. I set up this program called NetSuite for all the employees. It was pretty full on. But during that time I was working from like 6 a.m., 4 a.m. until very late at night. And I was having a lot of fun. It was a blast, but the environment for me wasn't a good fit. It was quite, for lack of a better word, like a very hyper masculine environment, like very Wolf of Wall Street. And I loved the company, but the environment was getting a little bit full on and I needed a rest. And I'd been, you know, listening to the Tropical MBA podcast. I had read Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Work Week and was kind of indoctrinating myself with working remotely and running my own stuff. But I wasn't quite ready to run my own business yet. I had like tried to do it inside the company a few times and didn't really go well. And so one day I went to my boss and I was like, hey, I'm going to go travel. And he was like, you can't do that. And I was like, well, I want to, like, I want to go travel. I want to go explore. And he's like, well, no, like you run all these like business entities. And like, you know, you help us run NetSuite, you run the e-commerce site. And I was like, well, how about I do it remotely? And so that kind of, and he just went, all right, whatever. Like, I can't lose you. So I guess like you can do this. And so I packed up my stuff and went to Bangkok, which I think is everyone's first stop, and kind of started the journey from there. And so initially over the first 6 months, I traveled from Asia, like traveled all throughout Asia. And then I went to the US for work actually. So we had the master franchise rights, the Gold's Gym in Australia. And so I got to go to Dallas, go to the head office and, you know, travel around and see a lot of the gyms in the States, which was a lot of fun. And then I ended up in Europe. And then by the time I got to Europe, I remember I was in France, Nice, and I was enjoying myself. I was making the same salary. So I was pretty happy. I was just like living out of hotels and hostels and stuff. And I was looking at the financials and they weren't looking good. So the Australian dollar at the time was starting to tank pretty aggressively against the US. And because we were an importer from the US making about 40% margin, when that difference closed and the Aussie dollar just got a lot weaker, all the margin went. And that started a catalyst of all the companies essentially folding. And so I was like, oh, this is an issue. And so to cut a long story short, I ended up picking up a couple of clients from my personal network and from people that I knew to do kind of like growth work on it. I didn't know what I was doing. I just knew I like needed to make money very fast to pay for the hotels I was staying at. And so I was like, well, I know AdWords, I know e-commerce, like let's help some sites. And so picked up a couple of customers and then I kind of quit. So I quit the job just in time because I quit the job to try and get what's called superannuation in Australia, which is your kind of like retirement funds. And so I got that, I quit. And then I left just in time as the business kind of like folded. And used the first couple of clients to essentially continue funding my travels. So that was the start. Yeah, that was the start. Which
basically you just pivoted through consulting initially.
Yeah, pivoted to consulting and tried to apply like the work that I was doing every day for the existing like previous employer, which was like email marketing and running ads, Facebook, like whatever I could get my hands on, and just help a couple of people that I found online through Twitter and through like LinkedIn, like however I could. I mean, I wrote like an article for a company called Trade Gecko once, and like, you know, it was an okay article on SEO, and like that landed me a pretty high end gig. So yeah, the early days was just like, man, I got to survive. Like, I'll just do whatever work I can and do my best at trying to sell it.
Yes, save money and then just pivot it. And then you started with like building your own thing, your own agency. I guess that's a natural thing when you're consulting, then you're just trying to build a system that can be serviced more clients, right?
Maybe, but in all honesty, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. So like at the time I was just picking up clients and then I get to a point where I'm like, oh, I can't do more work. Like I can't write another article. Like what am I supposed to do? And I don't even know how I got onto it, but I remember learning about a service that essentially like, well, so actually, to backstep a bit, I had hired employees in different regions before and had some short-term partnerships with Americans and Canadians and Australians. And in the outsource department, I'd worked with teams in India and the Philippines. For me, none of these seemed to have worked. And so I was looking for like another alternative to hire and increase my resources. And so I found a website. The website was called JobRack, JobRack.eu. And I put up a job offer just for someone to help with my agency. And at the time, I just wanted someone to help with content writing. Like it was just the bare minimum. I just needed like some more content to help with some SEO clients because I didn't want to pay like, yeah, you know, those like one-off writing services. And so I did that and it kicked ass. Like it just did really well. And I was like, I'm getting along great with these new employees that I had just hired. They had such phenomenal attitudes. Let's just keep doing it. And so, continue to hire and essentially at one point in time had a full service agency. We did a little bit of ads, a little bit of Facebook ads. We did content. We did link building. We just did everything. And it was very overwhelming and very stressful. Emotionally, I was very involved in all the work. So in every single client, I was like getting my hands dirty and it was still egotistically all about me doing the work. And that held me back for a very long time. I reckon that held me back for about 2 years. And we got to a point where the business was growing, but emotionally I was not there. I was in a very painful spot. It was like, it was destroying me. Like I was just overwhelmed. I was burnt out. And I had a little bit of a breakdown-ish when I was in, where was I? I was in somewhere in Eastern Europe. And I just remember being in my apartment, like sad, very sad, just because I was so overwhelmed. And so I actually flew back to Australia to get some mentorship from my old man. He'd been very supportive for the past couple of years. And he basically asked me a couple of, he's very stoic. So he asked me a couple of questions. He's like, what would this look like if, you know, we just removed all of it and you started again? That answer wasn't that scary. He also asked me like, what were the main important parts of the business that I did enjoy? And for me, there was the content part that was really important. Like for me, the content deliverables, like us basically hiring a writer, putting them in a company and letting them write full-time for that company was a service that like clients loved. They got a full-time writer, their output was phenomenal. And for me, it was an easy product to sell, but it took no time on my behalf. And so, yeah, again, cut a long story short, we ended up making the company a lot smaller. I found employees that I let go, new jobs, because for me, letting people go was like, it was a sign of defeat and I didn't want to let my team down. So I made sure everyone had new jobs and prospects to go to that paid the same amount of money and were often with previous clients. I let clients that were consuming a lot of time go. And then I kind of almost started again this kind of new model of hiring full-time writers to for firms and managing that. And then over the course of about 3 months, we surpassed the revenue. So again, you know, from peaking at revenue, collapsing, in about 3 months, I managed to sell back to existing rev. It was like a phenomenally happier business. My team was a lot happier. So the two phenomenal staff members that I have, Anastasia and Anna, they just crush it. And they have been crushing ever since. I'm only involved in the sales part now, which I enjoy. I love sales. And yeah, it's a lot more peaceful. And it's given me time to then work on my other businesses too, which I can talk about as well. But the journey was like consultant, full service agency, breaking down because no one likes running a full service agency, I don't think. No one can do that for a very long time, I think, unless they fully restructure the business. And then reforming it and almost like refactoring it, that would kind of be like the code term, refactoring into a business that I liked. And that agency now, it's in a good spot. I like it.
Yeah, definitely. I like the idea that you actually initially started pretty much as an employee, took your opportunity to develop your skill set, maybe save a little bit money, but at 20 years old, probably you didn't save a lot of money. That's why you needed to pivot to actually consulting. Then building an agency, build something that as a business model doesn't work. That's something that a lot of entrepreneurs make mistake. And that's something that I'm trying to build, something that runs without me. So anything that I do, any type of move, I'm just thinking about like 1 year, 2 years, 3 years from now, can this run without me? If it doesn't run, it's like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, but you know, a lot of the time you're building businesses out of desperation, like when you do have like a low cash flow. So like I did have savings. I saved up some money in when I was working in the supplement industry. And so for me at the time, like I had about probably 6 months. I probably could have stretched that to about maybe 8 months of time to figure this out. But man, I just hated seeing my bank balance go lower. I think like if I was more patient, I may have built the right business first instead of going into consulting. But I didn't want to lose money. So like I needed to consult, and then I didn't want to stop consulting because I liked the cash flow. I think they are really good cash flow businesses. I just think they're very time poor. They're very the agencies don't care about how you feel. Like I like to say that like money kind of, different types of money whispers different things to you. And agencies just yell at you. When they give you money, they're yelling at you when they do that. Software businesses, they're very like quiet, right? You just see your Stripe account just like slowly dinging. So when they give you money, it's just like ding, here you go. And now my agency now, the one that I have, it's a little bit more noisier, but I think our clients really like the deliverables. And so when we get money from them, it's like, thank you for your service. Whereas the agency was like, where are the deliverables? Like, blah, blah, blah. It's a horrible business to run.
Yeah. I can see that. I mean, I felt it a little bit, so definitely I know what you mean. Especially with agents, you need to first of all set the expectations right. So when I'm doing a sales calls, first of all, I think I'm trying to change their mind not to buy. That's my position there. Like, this works like this, and then what do you expect? Well, I expect that won't happen. It's this and this. Does this work for you? Like, a little bit Eastern European. You like it or not? I don't want to sell you, take your money, and then you're going to kill me. No, thank you.
Yeah, it's stressful, man. It's stressful. But I think in the early days, there is a lot of that. I think there is a lot of accepting deals that are potentially toxic because you need the money. And it's not until, you've got some cash in the bank and things are smooth that you're comfortable to say no. And there's so many people that are on podcasts and YouTube and stuff that they're like, it's okay to say no, like stand up yourself. I don't know, when you're not making money and like you're broke, you kind of have to say yes to everything, like just to survive. True. And then you can decide what type of business, and maybe spend some time on a beach thinking about, the ideal life that you want to live. And then you can start executing on that. But in the early days, it's just survive, survive, survive.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I did save a little bit money, so I can say no through consulting, actually, the same thing. So I'm pivoting now through the agency. I guess we have similar, let's say, timeline or roadmap. So you build the agency, it's successful, it runs. Does it run without you, or you still need to do anything?
I just do sales. So sales lead comes in, and if we've got capacity to take on a client, we usually don't. Because we've got a lot of relationships where when we find a new rider candidate, we just hit up an existing client, and they usually take them on instantly. And so we've got a large leads list that we've been nurturing for a while, but we rarely tap into it because it's not really a need. It's just like we find a great candidate, we place them almost immediately, or I hit up a friend who I know is looking for a rider. It's a very easy sales process. So maybe a few hours a week on that. That's
okay. Nice. You're basically leveraging your power base, basically people that you've done through consulting, past customers, unsold customer, or even lost customer. That's far better than actually doing a cold lead.
Yeah, there's no cold. It's all warm. And a lot of those relationships I met on the road, I met, in the US, I met in Europe, I met at conferences. And so whilst I was traveling, I was trying to stay in a lot of communities. A lot of communities have given a lot to me. Especially on Twitter and on communities like the Dynamite Circle on Tropical MBA, like that podcast community has given me so much. I'm like kind of forever indebted to those guys and a lot of my friends that I met along the way.
Yeah, I've done a few interviews with people from Tropical MBA. They are all really, really satisfied with how things are going there. So you build the agency pretty much, you've built it to remove yourself. And after that, you pivot to building a SaaS company. Why did you decide to go there?
Because I think, inherently my old man had a software company, and I think, I wasn't going to, I don't know, man. I think I was always going to get there. Like I was always going to get to the point where I had a software company. It just took me a very unique path to get there. So like ever since I was young, I'd done like HTML, CSS, just the basics, and had like built sites. And again, when I was working Magento and WooCommerce, that was another platform I was playing with, I had to learn some PHP. So I got to learn some code, and I would always like monkey script things just to get them working. I had a couple of projects that I tried to code myself. So I tried to teach myself Ruby on Rails. I've been following the Basecamp guys for a while because that's what I use to manage my projects. And Basecamp is built on Ruby on Rails. And so I was like, well, okay, I love this software. It seems very like simple. And I started like, it's like, oh, what if I wanted to build like a Basecamp type product? What would I need to learn? And I just kind of went down that path. And then, whilst running the agency, I just tried to teach myself how to code, teach myself Ruby. So I took myself through some courses, built little mini apps that were kind of pointless, but like good exercises. And then one day I had the idea of like, kind of like a large idea. I was like, oh, what if I had like a platform that just like, because on a lot of my clients, I was doing these little like script hacks, right? Whether that was like when I knew what a person bought, maybe I'd customize a headline. Or I was like using some code to sync stuff with Drip or MailChimp or ActiveCampaign. And I was like hacking all these like weird things together. And I was like, well, why can't I just build software that does these kind of hacky things for my customers. And I attempt to build it and it just flopped. Like I just wanted like my ultimate platform and it's just like, it just completely flopped and it sucked. And, but I kept trying at it and like trying. And at this point, the agency was at a good point. I had some good cash flow saved up and I was like, well, like, why don't, like, I don't want to do a course, but I want to get good at this. Like I want to know how to code and like, I want to be like a senior developer and I want to just like build something that prints money online. Like that was always like, I just want to like my own ATM machine. And I was like, well, that's obviously hard. So I need to find someone to teach me that. And again, I didn't find any courses or mentorship things that worked. There was one guy, a really amazing guy called Andrew Culver, who I'd followed for a while, was a senior Rails developer, incredibly smart, very intelligent, very empathetic and thoughtful. And it just so happened that he was going to Tokyo when I was there. It was just a good sync in. And so I caught up with him, we had coffee and I pitched him my idea and he was really excited about it. And he was working on something as well called Bullet Train, which is like Ruby on Rails, a framework for Ruby on Rails to get Ruby on Rails apps started faster. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Like I would love to be the customer of that. And so we basically were talking about both of our ideas and then realized there was a sync there. Like I could be his first customer and I could also pay him to build my platform on his platform, if that makes sense. And that's kind of how it started. And so Andrew, I paid a very fair market rate for a senior developer in the US, like kind of costs weren't cut in that regard, and paid him part-time to build the software for me. And I would learn through him doing that. And there were some benefits of that. Bento, the product that I run, it's an email marketing and analytics product. It's very complex and there's a lot of things that I really appreciate now that I didn't at the time, which is how do you model a business like that? How's the database structured? A lot of speed things that are pretty complex and were over my head at the time. But he'd run businesses before. He'd actually run and built a business called Churnbuster that had, you know, used to send emails to recover credit cards. And a lot of the things that we were tackling, he'd done. And so I got to see him build very quickly and I got to learn through just reading his code, reading his commits, and reading his kind of comments throughout the code. And yeah, I mean, a very long time. He basically worked part-time on that with me for about a year and a half or so. And then my skill set got to the point where I was able to take over a lot of the responsibility. And additionally, this was when things were getting very stressful at the agency. And I was like, I can't burn any more money when I'm going to take this big risk. So I had to get my skill set up. So basically I took over, he phased out, and then I kind of have ran on it from there and have worked with some part-time developers on Bento since, but basically use the agency very heavily to fund a senior developer to build the software company. And now both businesses are pretty profitable and pretty happy. And the email marketing business has been very hard to grow because to get competitive with Klaviyo, Drip, ActiveCampaign, they're beast, man. They've got hundreds of engineers working for them and I'm one dude. And now I think for a lot of things, we're at feature parity and we do better. But it's taken 2 and a bit years. It's been a very long journey, but rewarding and fun, but very, very long.
Yeah, I can see that you have the passion for the SaaS company, for Bento. Definitely interesting. Yeah. It can run to be a big one. I think you've laid down the foundation really good. And after that, it's just like building out the house.
So these things take a really long time. Like Bento didn't have an identity for about 2 years. Like in terms of like, who does it serve? What are the problems it's resolving? Like it was just kind of this, all these ideas that I'd come up with and I was just putting them into a product, but it wasn't massaged. It wasn't shaped. And it was getting the job done for some customers, but they couldn't self-serve getting the job done for themselves. And it took me, getting serious about the product as well to really cut things down, make things more focused, and really get the job done for very specific customers, which in my case were e-com and some complicated SaaS businesses that we work with. And the process now is honestly like every day logging in and just continuing to massage that business to get it to serve existing customers more. And so like the whole day today, I've just been like coding and working with Khalid, one of our part-time developers, working on our WooCommerce integration and making sure that that's seamless and speeding up segment calculation and all that. But my days are just like messing with code and having fun with customers and whoever is working part-time on the product.
Yeah, great, great. I think that there is a really good future there based on what I've seen on the website quickly and what you explained.
I hope so.
Yeah.
After a few years, I put a lot of money into it, man. Yeah. But on the stair-stepping note, there's no way I would have been able to build this product. Like, it's a complex, large product. And no way in hell I would have been able to tackle this problem without the agency funding it. And the product would look very... Like, the agency for a lot of things was like my own venture capital firm, right? I was like, can I please have some money? And it would just give me money. And then I would deploy it in terms of development time, which is what a VC company would do. They would give a company money and they would deploy that either into marketing or engineering resources. And that's what I was... That's how I was treating the agency. I was just like, give me money. I need to put this into my passion. And that's how I stair-stepped. So from consulting to hiring an agency and then grabbing that agency, using it as like a VC fund to fund the software. And then now they're at a point where they're both self-sustainable. But for the longest time, Bento was not self-sustainable at all. It was hemorrhaging money, a lot of money. But I don't know, it takes a while to build a big competitive product. It takes a really long time, yeah.
Yeah, especially if there are a lot of big players in the field. So
yeah. Thanks, man. And I mean, it's like when you're going up against these large categories, they're like entrenched players. So when you're up against Klaviyo and Drip and Omnisend and I don't know, there's so many of them, right? It's a very large market, but to get in a consumer's mind and to go, hey, you should also consider Bento. Like, we do email marketing, we do personalization, we do pop-up, we do the whole gamut, and I think we do it really well. But to get in someone's head that you're even a comparison just takes a lot of time. And I think there are a lot of really great SaaS businesses, a lot of agencies, a lot of consultants that gave up kind of too early. Like, you know, they may have been at it for 2 years, 1 year, and then they're like, oh, it's just too hard. But sometimes businesses take 3 years, 4 years just to get some traction. And it doesn't mean you've been doing anything wrong. It's just sometimes there's a lot of work for certain types of businesses. Others, you know, if you're building a Shopify plugin and it's a, you know, a color picker for shoes, and that starts doing 10 grand, maybe you've just created, you know, you just found a pot of gold and you're off to the races straight away. But most businesses aren't like that. I think, you know, good long-term businesses just take just as long to get up and running and surviving.
Yeah, definitely. It makes sense. Something related to resistance. This is something I always say to my clients and how I think about resistance, especially for cold outreach, or as you said, coming to a consumer mind to consider your product, is like you're attacking a castle, a stronghold. A stronghold has a big walls, it has a gate, and over there to take over the castle, or at least to consider you, you need to do a lot of activity that maybe doesn't produce results. If you're going to break through the wall, you need to have a lot of stones thrown in, or if you want to break through the gate, you need to... Mm-hmm. push with battering ram like many, many times before the door opens. Once it's open, then you can send your armies, basically your ideas, your features, et cetera, et cetera. And then it's much easier for you to, you know, storm the castle and conquer it eventually. But first you need to break through the gates.
Yeah. But sometimes like kind of extending that point a little bit, like, you know, that battering ram might be your tool and there might actually be a better tool to use than that battering ram. Yeah. And you know, maybe it takes finding the right person and, you know, they've got like a bazooka that they can blow it down, right? Like sometimes it takes the right person to unlock. And a lot of the times in this journey, like it's been about finding the right person or the right duo. And that's actually unlocked the business. And I think ego wise, that's hit me quite a lot. It's, it took a bit to realize that like my businesses are more than just me. And I don't know, I'm like, again, like I'm young, my ego is often pretty high and I'm constantly pulled in to check where I'm like, oh man, like I actually suck at this, like such and such is much better. And you know, whether that is with the agency, the two employees that I have that lead the agency now, Anastasia and Anna, they are so much better than me at everything in that operation. Like as far as operations are concerned and managing the writers and managing the content queues and even SEO research, I think I'm great. Man, they've had a lot of years to now learn and they're pretty good. Like I'm just now approving stuff, right? Because they're coming up with great terms, great research, and they unlock that business. Without those two as a unit working in the agency, wouldn't exist. Without Andrew helping me in the early days with Bento, wouldn't exist. Without Khalid helping me last month on the workflows feature in Bento, we wouldn't have completed that, and I wouldn't have stolen a very large customer who was on Klaviyo last week. So there's a lot of these relationships that unlock potential in any business. And I think if you're just kind of like heads down doing it yourself, yeah, you sometimes cannot move anywhere for a very long time. So it takes the right people to actually unlock. And I think in the early days, you don't realize that because you've never done it. But after it happens again and again and again, I think my mindset now is like, yeah, it's a pattern. And I think I'm realizing now, like, how do I find these great people to kind of unlock next phases? Like even the sales side, I'm like, I need a great sales guy. Because a great salesperson can help me close more deals and potentially do some outreach to unlock some more conversations, because I can't do it myself. I'm shipping code. I'm doing all this stuff. I like to think I can, but really I can't.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. So let's break it down how it works. Like, when is a good time to actually pivot from one business to another? Because I see a lot of people like put their hands in everything and they don't do anything at the moment. Let's start with consulting. You're building up basically a saving, an income, a name, a brand to initially start your agency. When you should think about to actually start an agency and, you know, start with employees, building a system, etc.
A few things. One, save money. So like, make sure you have some cash in the bank, because if you're going to employ anyone, have the responsibility to back them when stuff doesn't go right. So if, you know, you have to let employees, like, well, let's say clients churn, you need to cover that. You need to cover that. You can't just kind of like, you know, clients fire you and then you're like, bye, like, I'm going to leave you. And I've seen people do this and they don't actually recover from it, because like they either develop a bad reputation. People don't trust businesses that fire their staff willy nilly. So that's a bit. Save money before you move to next stages, so you have some cash, or make sure you have some good cash flow and you can actually invest that in the next phase. So when moving from consulting to the agency, save some money, work out your numbers and work out the product that you're actually going to sell and focus on. If you're going to go into the agency, work out, all right, what is the one product that I can actually scale and hire more people for? For me, it was just content writing only. And I wish I'd done that from the start. What I did wrong was I went, all right, I'm going to do Facebook, Google Ads. So it means I had a Google Ads person, I had a Facebook person, I had content writers, I had you know, a full stack agency. And like, what am I going to do if like a couple of AdWords clients fire me? And then technically that AdWords unit is now not profitable. It's not a good position to be in. And then now that employee is very, very stressed because they're like, oh, my salary is not being covered. And, you know, you're kind of, what's the phrase? It's like you're stealing Peter to pay Paul. You know, you're just moving money around this organization. And in the supplement company, this is something that I learned, because this is what we were doing. We'd move money from a supplement business to the distribution business to the gym. And it was this thing that we never actually knew if we were profitable or not, because just money was always going around. Yeah. So I think when you go from consultant to an agency, keep it simple. Do it well, keep it simple, and be like the best in your kind of class or category at whatever it is. Whether that is, I just do link building and I'm the best at it. I just do SEO and I'm the best at it. I'm a designer. I just do design, you know, I just do Twitch emotes, right? As like an example, like I just do one thing better than everyone else. And then it makes marketing easy. It makes working out who your customers easy to find. It makes just everything so much simpler. And then it also means you start seeing things as products. So it's like, all right, if I have 10 clients, I can service 10 clients with 3 employees, or I can service 10 clients with 4 employees and 1 manager. And you can start working out the maths and the unit economics behind that. In a full service agency, no way in hell, it's just too complex.
Before you lose your thought, just curious, how much money you should save before you actually started with the agency? Like before you start employee, you can start the agency, you can be one man show, but how much do you think should be like a safety net, let's say month wise, because it's different for each country, obviously.
Yeah, I'm conservative, so I'd say like 6 to 12 months. I would hope everyone can find something to do in 6 to 12 months, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like hard to fail. 3 months might be a bit short, right? The other thing is I would also look at the location that you're in. In the location that you're in, can you find opportunities? So for me, like, let's say I started from scratch, I'd probably move to, like, started from scratch, but had the same skill sets. So it was in e-commerce, knew how to run ads. I would probably hang out in Lisbon, Bali, Bangkok. There's movement there and there's people that I can connect and help. And so for me, it's not just about the money you have saved, but also the location that you put yourself in. For me, being in Japan, Japan is very quiet. It's a lovely country. There is no business opportunity here. My business opportunity is like online. It's Twitter, it's communities, it's that. I am not bumping into people doing SaaS apps or running agencies that do content for SEO firms in Kyushu, Japan. It's just not happening. And so I think when you do decide to go into the next phase, position yourself in a location that makes the most of the money that you have saved. So yeah, that would probably be the rule that I would go. So have maybe 3 to 6 months and move to the right location.
Okay. Makes sense. Okay. So when people should start hiring for agency?
When you
like
can
right
pay
at the beginning? Okay.
So maybe when you're comfortable with selling, maybe. Okay. I think selling can get you out of a lot of things. It can get you out of a lot of very tricky positions if you've got a good sales mindset and you know where to hunt deals. So when I was working in the supplement company, we had sales reps all over the place. And I had to learn sales. So I had to call up and do cold calls to supplement companies and be like, will you buy my protein powder? And they would have, you know, they would say yes or go away. And I'd be like, come on, it's a great deal. So I learned a lot in sales. And the good thing with that is whenever I've been in a money pinch, the only thing that's ever saved me is sales. So I go through old leads. I go through relationships. I'm like, hey, I can do this for you. I can do that for you. I've got like this product, like please buy my services. And because I've maintained good relationships, I've been able to close those deals and bring companies back to life. When all the COVID stuff hit, there was a very short 2-week period where I saw a lot of friends' credit cards fail because, their businesses tanked very quickly. And I was able to replace those clients immediately with good relationships. And so I think, and it was just good. Like now the agency is stronger than it ever has been, even after COVID, but that's only because of sales. It's like picking up the phone, picking up those old relationships. And the reason I bring that up is because when you bring employees, it's your responsibility as the founder and the leader to pay their salaries and to look after them. And if you don't do that, you're a bad person. And so I think, the way as a founder is to get good at sales so then when money does get hard, sell whatever you have to keep those people employed and get them through the hard times. And so if you can sell, then you can probably scale up your services and maybe extending that, work out what your lead source is. Is it cold outreach? Is it warm relationships? Is it, you know, a Google search result? Make sure you have consistent leads. You're good at closing deals and then give yourself permission to hire, I think, after that.
Yeah. Okay. So basically keep your pipeline full.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. That'd be the summary. Just keep the pipeline full, keep it warm, and just make sure you've got some good relationships out there because there will be randomly hard times. And it's going to be out of your control. It's going to be a client goes bankrupt, a client over hedges on a purchase order, a client gets a new CMO, a new chief marketing officer, and they go, oh, I don't like working with such and such. I just want to work with the person I worked at the old company. And then you're replaced. And then maybe like, you know, 50% of your MRR just disappears overnight. You need to make sure you're comfortable protecting yourself from that. And that happens all the time throughout kind of the entrepreneurship journey. And you just have to be good at selling so that when that happens, you're like, all right, let's go find a new deal to close that revenue.
Yeah, definitely. You can just replace it as quickly as possible. So that's why the pipeline should be full, definitely. Okay, so what's the next step? Do you need to build like a system, like a process, what works, everything before hiring? Like, should be perfect, or you just have to have something in place and learn as you go?
Yeah, it's a good question. Always do things from first principles. So don't actually look at mimicking others. Look at your unique business and look at your unique challenges and solve them one by one. So for us, we've always like, I don't send proposals ever. So like all of our agency, like throughout the whole history of our agency, I don't think like I've maybe sent 10 proposals for years. Right. And they've always been for the enterprise clients. You're like, oh, we've got to have a proposal. I'm like, but I don't send proposals. And they're like, well, can you please make one? I'm like, all right. So I'll go to like Google Docs and search proposal template and then just write like a 2-pager or something. But I actually learned this from the Basecamp guys. The Basecamp guys also didn't do proposals. And when they did do proposals, they were very short. They were like the same for every person. And they were essentially like 6 pages. It was like a PowerPoint deck essentially of like their beliefs, their offering, and that's it. And so usually I had like one of those that I would send through and like just change the name and send it over. But yeah, just wait, what was your question again? I just started thinking about an old
Before you hiring, do you need to build like a system, everything, how it works, like a standard operating procedure, or you have to have maybe basic thing in place and after that the team can develop it?
Yeah. Okay, cool. Now I remember what I was saying. So yeah, always go to first principles and ask yourself, do I really have to do this? Or what would make things easier for me? There's one person that I follow who they always say, what would it take? Always ask yourself that, like, what would it take to make this easy for me? And so for me, like one of the questions that I had when I was growing the agency was like, how do I know my team's doing what they say they're going to do? Because that gives me peace of mind if I know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And for me, what worked was just daily check-ins. And a lot of agencies don't do that. So we only do text-based only. We don't even do calls. Like, I don't think Anastasia likes calls or talking to me. It's like, she just likes working and doing her stuff peacefully. And like, I'm okay with that. I just want to code and like work on my stuff. And like, you know, I think she's fantastic. We don't need to call to like move the business forward. And so we ditch calls. We move to text-based only updates. And we do like a Monday morning summary of what our week's going to be. And then every day we just say, hey, today I did this and this and this. And these are some questions I have. And man, that's been great. It's just nice not like jumping on a call all the time, like needing to, you know, spend a couple of hours talking. And we do it occasionally, but realize that kind of wasn't needed for us to survive. So I think you don't need to build everything out before hiring. But when you do hire that first person, realize that it's going to be tricky for about 6 to 8 weeks as you work out how they work and how you work together. And then build systems around you and the person you're working with and what feels good and natural. Don't look at your friends. Don't look at other agencies. Take things from first principles and just kind of make sure you've been in the company your way, not someone else's way. Otherwise, like the kind of shirt won't fit.
Yeah. Like why do you build it if you don't like it, how it runs?
But people do. They copy others. Yeah. They copy others and then they go, why am I unhappy? And you're like, oh, you know, you copied someone else's happiness. And I don't think that's how it works.
Yeah, true. Okay. So you build an agency. You have few employees. How can you remove yourself from operations so maybe you can focus on sales? That's something that I want to think about because I'm good in sales. I can have a lot of customers, but like I don't want to close them because it has to be fulfilled. It has to be like, oh, screw this. So how can you remove yourself from operations for fulfillment?
I think a large part is ego. I think a lot of entrepreneurs I see, it's like, I can do this better than other people. And that's very egotistical to think that way. But I think it's so natural, right? Especially if you're building a business yourself, it's so natural to be like, I'm the best. I can do it my way. But like, that's just such a lie. There are better designers than you. There are better salespeople than you. There are better content writers than you. The thing that I think people can't do better is write from the heart and be as passionate. And that's leadership. So like that's running the company. That is making sure cash is in the bank. Maybe that's sales, right? So that leading, you know, sales teams and leading the internal team. So yeah. Just wait. I keep losing my thought because I keep thinking about moments in time.
Don't worry. So you have few employees. I don't want, for example, to touch the operations. So you have more time. Like how can you do that? What's the smart way? How did you actually do it?
Cool. Identify who in your team is killer and just keep giving them more responsibility and pay them appropriately. So in our team, Anastasia was by far like the best employee that I had at the time. Mm-hmm. And so we little by little gave her more responsibility and she just continued to thrive. And like, yeah, she runs the company now. She is the company. And so I think acknowledging that, like, so that's one piece. If you've got employees, then essentially find who thrives and just give them more work. if you don't, or you have a very small team, maybe you're not happy about those employees. Maybe think about finding better staff and then leveling up those employees. So that's a hard decision you may have to make. And then the other alternative is like, start looking. So for me, like I just found great Twitter talent. Well, sorry, great development talent recently through Twitter. So just asking Twitter, hey, does anyone know React and also Rails, which is the framework I write in, and an old, I think I mentioned to you before the call, an old client responded, and then I made the connection with this new developer that way, and he's just killed it ever since he started. Like, I'm just blown away. Phenomenal code, moving so quickly. As we're on the call now, he's patching like three massive bugs that have been stressing me out for about a year. So it's a yeah, sometimes you got to like keep your eyes open and work out who and he's taking it on the development side. Khalid, who I hired, who I just mentioned, he's taking a lot of responsibility off me, man. So it's like finding that right talent and just give the keys to them and just hope that they do okay. And if they don't berate them and get angry and stuff. Just take that as a learning moment and work out where you went wrong and just try and keep improving. Like, not everyone's going to be a win that you hire, but when you find those wins, you really do start easily removing yourself out of the core processes of the business. And whether that is product creation, sales, or marketing, like, you can probably find a key person in those roles. It just takes some time and it takes the right person, I think, to put in all those different positions.
When you say time, just curious, what is the realistic expectation to build a, let's say, an agency that runs by itself, it has a stable cash flow, and you can just pivot it to something else? Like, in your experience, what is the realistic expectation?
It depends how you start. I mean, if you've got a killer product, you've got a great reputation in a market or a community, and your just service matches that community really well, and so you've just got like a simple product, you're in a community, you can sell it to that community, then you can probably build a pretty sizable business in 6 to 12 months.
Wow.
If you don't do that, I think you're just on an endless loop until you do that, right?
Mm-hmm. So there is no like a timeline, but probably at least a few years, right? If it's your first time.
It's that like community product sales fit, right? It's do I have an offering that a lot of people easily understand? I'm part of communities or, you know, groups, or I have an audience that is going to resonate with this product. And then do I have the ability to sell? And if you can kind of resolve those three points, I don't think any of this is really hard. But getting to the point where those three points are nailed is very difficult and takes a very long time and a lot of kind of blood, sweat, and tears, you know. Like, the agency now is an amalgamation of all my friendships and relationships and meetings and lunches and conferences and Twitter DMs and you know, helping people out for free all the time. Like, the you know, you said at the start that seven-figure agency is only because of all those great friendships and partnerships. It's like, yeah, that seven-figure agency doesn't exist without all that. And so, yeah, it's it takes time. It takes a lot of hard work. And and you got to maintain it as well. Like, I worry about that now being in Japan full-time.
Okay.
I do, and even with COVID and stuff, I do worry about that lack of face-to-face. You know, it's all nice being a digital nomad and all that, but like, the face-to-face stuff does matter. And if you don't do the face-to-face stuff, you have to make up for it through digital assets, videos, calls, Twitter, whatever. But the best relationships I've ever had are the people I've met in real life. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely makes sense. I think I was on a lunch maybe 6 months ago with Anna and Adrian. Like, we were on a co-working space, so.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I met them before. Instead of just, you should come to Macedonia, definitely.
No, I should. It's been a while. I think we did a team retreat in Italy, I think, 3 years ago.
Yeah. I remember Adrian was there. By the way, for the listeners, when Adrian is my friend who introduced us, and they worked together, I guess, initially with the agency, so.
Mm-hmm. Adrian was with us for agency version one for probably about 12-ish months or a little bit more. He is a very funny guy. And I hope he crushes it. I can see he's working on affiliate sites and stuff. And to be honest, I'm pretty excited about it. He's a cool guy. He's got a funny attitude.
Yeah. Interesting. He's one of my best friends.
Awesome.
Cool. Yeah. Okay. So you build the agency, then you pivot to something else. Are you a little bit afraid? Like, I'm investing time in something new. It doesn't pay. Maybe my first thing that I already built is going to crash. Like, how do you, you know, level your emotions there?
You don't. I think you go through the emotions and like, you just have to keep up with it, right? Like, I think you need to know what you're passionate about. So me, I wanted a software company. I wanted to, you know, live life on my terms. I never wanted to work for anyone else again. So I knew these things were all true. And like, I just kind of believed in the process. And like, I'm still unsure, man. Like, you know, the software company's growing, but it's hard work. The agency's growing. It's not hard work, but still, it's like, well, this could all disappear relatively soon. And so this is probably like another key thing that I think is worth mentioning. Hedge yourself. So throughout all this, I was also buying internet assets at the same time. Mm-hmm. I've got a lot of publishing websites, affiliate sites, AdSense sites, and I grabbed the cash flow from the agency and didn't just invest it in Bento, but I also bought assets with that. And every asset that I bought, you know, the first one that paid me like $1,000 a month, right? I bought that for, I don't know, I bought it for a pretty good deal. I bought it for like $25,000. Pays $1,000 a month still to this day. I knew that that paid rent in any, you know, in most cities, right? Like I knew I could basically live in Bangkok or live in Chiang Mai and have my baseline covered from that one little internet asset that I bought. So I made a lot of those decisions so that I could, you know, like my dad, I mentioned earlier in the podcast, like my dad said, it's like, what would happen if everything just disappeared? And if the agency disappeared and Bento disappeared, I'm fine. I can like still pay rent. I can still buy food. Things are okay. And you know, the next one's like, what if one of those websites disappears? I have other websites, so it's fine. What if they all disappear? I have Bento. So it's like hedging your bets and making sure that you're protected and you have a portfolio, but also making sure that those portfolio assets can be leveraged by the existing business. So occasionally my team will work on those sites as well. And I kind of treat them as our own clients. And so that's another bit of perspective. It's like, just hedge yourself so that you get less anxious. When all your eggs are in one basket, it may help that basket grow, but you're always kind of worrying, like, what if everything kind of disappears? And if your answer is like, then I have no money and I'm going to go broke and have to move with my parents, then like try and work out how not to do that. And ask that question, which is what would it take for that not to happen? And often it's like hedging yourself. This is also true in investing. So, you know, if you buy stocks, you can also hedge against them in case markets crash. There's a whole bunch of different financial assets for that. I've also done stuff with stock trading as well to also hedge myself on the chance that things go very, very bad.
Wow. Okay. You built a lot of strongholds.
of walls. Because
another wall, the castle is...
But you have to, otherwise, like, yeah. I don't have funding behind me, man. Like, you know, like, who am I going to ask for money? I don't want to ask my parents for money. I don't, like, no way I'm ever going to do that. I don't actually want to take money from my friends unless they're paying for services or software. So there's an exchange of a product there. And I don't know, I'm not ready to ever take money for one of my businesses. And so I also have no interest in selling a lot of the businesses that I have. So the agency or software business, don't want to sell them. I'm not interested in it. And so, I just have to kind of like protect myself and hedge because I don't have another cash reserve to kind of lean back on. I've just got myself, which not everyone does that. I mean, it's an option. I mean, if you've got a family and stuff, maybe taking investment money and putting someone else's money at risk makes total sense. And I see remote entrepreneurs doing that when they run their business now. You know, you've got small funds like Tiny Seed, Earnest Capital, like these firms that you can sell a little bit of your company and they'll like pay your salary for a couple of years. Those firms are kind of interesting to get money from to de-risk stuff. But yeah, if you're going it alone, you want to be a lone wolf, like just protect yourself and hedge aggressively so you can sleep a little bit better at night. it's still stressful, but yeah, hedge yourself a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely. And I think what you said, basically protect yourself, it's a lot of true after COVID-19. Like everything stopped, everything went weird. So if you were just had all your eggs in the basket, somebody stomp on them and just crash everything. But if you have more baskets, definitely works. Nice cat, by the way. Like it.
Yeah, thanks. Got a cat and a dog in Japan.
Yeah.
you are right though. So like with COVID, I think that did shake a lot of people up. And I actually noticed that it shook a lot of friends up. So this was an interesting thing for me. A lot of my friends that had full stack agencies suffered a lot because their core product was not perfect. A lot of clients were asking, like, why am I paying, you know, $2,000 for SEO reporting? Like, what am I getting for that? And those clients churned, and I saw pretty large businesses, you know, businesses that were either like seven figure or like high six figure that kind of went to almost zero very, very fast. And it's because they didn't have good products. They didn't have products that, you know, they were in a bull market. And so it was easy for them to sell to profitable businesses. But when those profitable businesses were like, all right, we're in survival mode, they just cut everything that was non-essential. And I think for a lot of entrepreneurs, that was a pretty good signal that, hey, like what I was selling probably wasn't a big enough pain point. Things like, let's say, video editing services, great in a bull market where people are making podcasts, they're making videos, whatever, and they're paying editors to clean that up because they got some spare cash. In a COVID market, I'll edit myself. Like, I don't need to pay an editor, right? And I think a lot of this is happening over and over and over again. And now's a really good time to work out what's an essential product and service that I can sell that is valuable, that demands a good value, you know, that I can charge a good amount for. And you can build a really good business off that, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Initially, I was building the agency for podcast post-production, by the way. But after COVID hit, I killed that because I know that I was not essential and like nobody would pay money.
Yeah, I mean, that's unfortunate. And I'm sorry to have picked that niche, but it's true, right, though? Like, it's so much harder to send a cold email to be like, hey, man, like, I'll buy you 10 hours a week back. Like, people are like, man, I don't know when the next paycheck's coming in. I'll edit myself. Bugger you.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It makes sense.
Definitely. Mm. Yeah, but lead generation is something that people cold outreach, they don't want to do, and they need that, and they don't have the experience. So that's definitely far more worth it. And it will bring them money. So it's essential if you think about it.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's a good service to sell. I see. Yeah. Like definitely. For me, I'm interested in, like, when you're saying, like, I sell prospects and leads and stuff, like, I would like you to email me because I'm interested about that. Like, for our software business, we need more leads. And so for me, that's immediately interesting. For kind of soft services on the agency side, it's very easy to cut them off. Like, the things that I found myself not cutting off is, bookkeeping. That's something that has been essential for me. But if my business wasn't going as well as it was, bookkeeping would be kind of like on the chopping block. Other services that are doing well, content services do well. Link building's been questioned. AdWords, Facebook ads, whilst they exist, and in a COVID market, a lot of brands are actually doing pretty well. People are bringing that in-house, which is very different. So they're finding employees and they're going, hey, Bob, do you know ads? And Bob's like, maybe. And they're like, all right, Bob, just take over the campaigns and give it a go. And I'm noticing a lot of e-commerce stores and businesses are doing that. So Facebook agencies are suffering. AdWords agencies are suffering. But there's probably some very interesting services there, like AdWords audits, Facebook audits, coming into a business, like let's say a large firm, and going, hey, I'll audit your agency for you and show you where you're losing money. Man, you could probably sell a service like that all day long. It's probably a really easy pitch, right? Especially a client to audit your agency for like a couple of grand, you could sell that service all day. Like, so yeah, I think there's some probably really interesting businesses to come from this. And kind of excited to see them.
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to see. I think a lot of people are going to lose, but a lot of people will see this as an opportunity and just take advantage of it and build something new, as always.
For sure.
Okay. Just curious, how can people find you? Are you, I know that you are active on Twitter. Are you available anywhere? Like, how can people find you?
Yeah. So if you type in my first name and last name.com, I think that's the easiest because I got like my Twitter link there and stuff. I spent all my time on Twitter. So all my spare time is on Twitter. It's like where all my friends are. I get a lot of value out of it. So yeah, I mean, go to my website, find my Twitter, and feel free to send me a DM if this is like an interesting conversation. And I'm always happy to help. Like, I'll take off my sales hat for anyone that needs a hand, and happy to come like help with anything in terms of building a business through stair-stepping, like we've chatted about today. Or if you've got questions about general marketing or software, happy to kind of help.
Okay, perfect. And can you quickly explain, like, how can you help with your agency and your software in case somebody is looking something like that?
Sure. So the quick pitch for the agency is we'll hire a full-time employee in Eastern Europe to work on your business. So we produce all the content. A lot of the time we'll do the SEO research, though you can provide us with the terms if you want. And essentially the output's pretty phenomenal. So like when you have someone writing every day, 8 hours a day on your website, you're producing a lot of content, a lot more than your competitors, and you kind of move the needle that way. So that's one. If you're an e-commerce site or an affiliate, like hit us up, we'll happily do that. On the software side, Bento is an email marketing platform and live chat software. So if you use Klaviyo or Intercom or any of those, you can move over to Bento because we'll consolidate all your tools. So if you're using, you know, Intercom, Klaviyo, a pop-up tool, what else we got? A personalization tool. You can save the subscriptions of all those and just pay for Bento. It's going to probably cut your costs by maybe a half. And we do everything that everyone else does. And I think it's really good tooling. And I like any customer that signs up to Bento. So yes, it's a good SaaS tool. But yeah, email marketing, live chat. There's a lot of other really kind of advanced tools for like prosumers that I enjoy and others enjoy too.
Perfect. So guys, if you're looking for a solution like that, definitely hit Jesse up. You can go on Twitter or his website. I'm going to include all the links to the show notes so it will be easier for you. Last thoughts. Do you have any book that can help us or a course or any video material for building, let's say, an agency? Basically, how you build it. Like, what were you learning to build that, what you built?
This one. So like five minute journal is a good one. It's not a book, but like,
okay,
it's a good resource. So like with the 5 minute journal, you essentially like, it's like a gratitude journal, man. I mean, it's kind of corny, but okay, I don't know. It's kind of nice reflecting on your day. Like you don't even need to answer the questions. They've got that. Like you can just writing and going like, what did I actually do today? Like what made today good? And sometimes like when you write and do this for like 5 days in a row, sometimes you realize you're in a slump and sometimes you realize things aren't good, and reflecting on that can sometimes pull you out of those slumps. So that's one. Another interesting one is Before the Exit, Dan Andrews' book. That one's really good. It makes you think about what your business looks like if you were building it for the exit, and what selling a business is like. The reason I really like that book is sometimes when you build the perfect business to sell, sometimes it becomes the business you don't want to sell, and sometimes you keep it. And so that's another resource. So yeah, 5 minute journal, reflect on your ideas, and The Exit by Dan Andrews. I think it's on Amazon and Kindle. Yeah, it's a good book.
Yeah, perfect, perfect. Okay, well, Jesse, thank you for being part of the podcast and sharing your story and journey. And I look forward to see you in Macedonia one day, or maybe in Bali or Chiang Mai. Whatever.
Yeah, we'll go out and grab a couple of drinks. It'll be fun with Adrian, yeah?
Yeah, for sure. For sure, it will be fun. Okay.
Cool. Awesome.
Well, guys, thank you for listening or watching. As I said, I'm mostly active on Instagram. You can find me at remotepreneurs or on the website remotepreneurs.com. You can just drop us your email. I'm going to send you the show notes, the material, the links, everything, pretty much summarized episode what we've discussed with Jesse, so you can immediately take action and start building your business or start building another business if you already have. Once again, Jesse, thank you for being part of the podcast, and I definitely look forward to actually meet you face to face.
For sure, man. Me too. This was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Likewise. Okay. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. Subscribe to the podcast to be the first to hear new episodes. And if you feel that this episode provided you with value, we invite you to share this podcast with a friend that is trying to escape the matrix and create his or her own remote economy. Visit remotepreneurs.com and join the email list to receive this episode's show notes and a welcoming gift.